It's time for the Jam Master. Ladies and gentlemen, an actor, a writer, a producer, a director of theater, film and TV, first appeared in a television production of Wole Soyinka's The Strong Breed when you were 10 years old. 10 years old.
Well, are you counting?
I can't.
you were. What are you doing when you were 10?
Not counting. For sure.
Welcome to the studio.
Has received lifetime achievement awards from the Ministry of Culture, Cairo, Egypt, and Ministry of Culture Affairs, Tunisia. Have you received anything from Kenya yet?
Love from my fans.
Welcome.
Is that politically correct now?
it's correct. Karibu sana. Welcome so much. And we're just very first June. Can I ask that question?
Ask it.
Who are you? We've heard what you are, but who are you?
I'm not ready.
You're not ready.
You know.
Are they like those big life questions?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
What did you say?
Who am I? Not what do you do, but who are you?
I am kind, I am grace, I am beautiful.
You are Mumbi.
Are those what's or are those who? Are those who's? Are they good enough for who's?
They're good enough
fantastic.
For who's.
Yeah? They're good fantastic. For who's. Mumbi Kaigo is in the studio, guys. Okay.
Fire, baby.
So she's here. You've been waiting. And we want you to have an opportunity to send your questions in as well. So let us know at the Jam 984. Use the hashtag JamMasters if there's something that you banning you to ask. You can also send us a message on 0701 984 984. Second question, now that we know whomst you are, how did it all start for you at the age of 10? Somebody saw you, said udem anasa act tumweke kwa ikitu. What happened?
My uncle was an actor with the Nairobi University Free Traveling Theater, and they were looking for a girl to play Girl, that's the name of the character.
Girl, of course, very descriptive, very original. Girl.
In a production that was being directed by Seth Adagala, who was the first African director of the National Theatre. And it was heady times. It was 1972, in case anybody's trying to work out what year it was. So because my uncle knew my mom, he knew how to ask for permission, and he drove a Kawasaki motorbike, so I used to go to rehearsals and on the back of his bike, and it was much safer then than it is now to be on a bike. I can tell you
it was called a bike, not a border. That also tells you
another thing.
Quite a lot.
It's called a bike. Yeah, so we would go for rehearsals, and we were working with Seth Adagala, Greg Adambo. I can't remember all the names of all the people, but it was all the greats and all the sort of fiery, very politically fired up members of the theatre scene at the time who were really trying to come out of the colonized space that was the National Theatre, that was theatre at that time. Many of the theatre spaces were not accessible to us as Africans. And this was a production that was being filmed at the Kenya Institute of Mass Communication, KIMC, and it was then broadcast on VOK, which was the Voice of Kenya, which is now KBC.
So that game has been around for a long time. They call it, our guest yesterday was a poet called Goofy, and he said it was referred to as the Kenya Institute of Making Celebrities. You are here, so
the proof
is in the pudding. All right, wow.
So that was the first thing that I did, and then, you know, in school there was a lot more, I don't know whether there was a lot more, but at the time you were offered an opportunity to not only be academic but also to do things that were extracurricular. And I loved verse speaking. For some reason I loved to memorize things and stand on a stage and recite them.
These are the things we started calling choral verses later.
Choral was a group of people, but I used to do the thing
individual.
by myself. So it was a category in the Kenya Music Drama Festival. And so I used to win for the school. And so it was kind of like a natural progression that I would be in theater when I was in high school. But I didn't really do anything that I can really remember until I was maybe in Form 3 or so.
Do you remember the school?
I remember the school. You're so rude.
Tell him. This is what I have to deal with every day. Tell him.
What is this school called?
Long time ago.
Yeah. What is this school
my called? My children. Yeah. There used to be a school. Yeah. That was called...
Yeah, you used to be.
Limuru Girls School.
Is that Chalks?
Chalks, yeah.
Ah, Allah.
Yeah.
Hey, shout out to Chalks. By the way, you guys are so awesome.
We are.
You're so awesome, ladies. Hey, as yeah. you can hear.
Yeah, so, but, so we had... theatre competitions between houses and Betty Hinger and I rewrote or made into a play a poem again by Wole Soyinka, funnily enough, called The Telephone Conversation, and our house won. And then the following year in Form 4 I won the district zonal blah 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 up to the nationals for the best actress in Kenya.
Did you go before the president?
We went before the president and recited for him a poem. And thank you.
And gestures.
Let me tell you. That was the biggest thing.
We did. We went to State House. And we I don't know whether we performed the play, but we certainly were invited to State House and given, was it chips?
And a soda.
Yeah.
Those are the days.
Heady times. Heady
before
times.
The milk, you were given chips.
Just before
the milk. Oh my gosh.
So we're going to go into the business news. Our jam master is a real master. A real one, as in proper. All of them have been, but this for me.
For
as
you,
a,
eh?
As a, in the creative and the arts, for me, I'm just excited.
You are excited.
I'm over. Hey, June, carry on, please. I'm excited.
No, it's okay. Take a moment. Yeah. We will take over.
The best mix of music. 98.4 Capital FM.
This is The Jam on 98.4 Capital FM, and you're listening to June Gashui, Martin Karaoke, and all of us here in the studio are just in
Aware.
It's called Aware.
Aware.
We are so awed by our jam master. Miss Bobby Kaigwa is in the building, and we've started the story of your journey from 1972.
Because when I was walking without
shoes. Oh, yeah, of course, you must add that. Hiya.
17 kilometers.
Kawasaki.
Yeah, to go and say hi to someone.
And you were the only one who would get number one in your class.
And the hills were uphill going and uphill coming
back. Yeah. All your friends lived 40, in another county. Far away, when we were taking a kettle.
How many times have your kids heard this story?
I don't tell it like this.
Our cows were the only ones that had to go to the deep every day.
There's a generation that laughs and there's a generation that just looks at you like...
Ati no shoes, not even akala. But no, we're talking all things... you know, the creative industry. And I think, Mombi, you're one of those people who... tells the rest of us and confirms the rest of us that it is possible, you know, to flourish in this space. And we're not going to assume that it was an easy ride.
Mm. I was barefoot.
You were indeed.
I don't know if you understand.
It was a calloused walk. It was not as smooth sliding down. Okay, Marty, are you okay?
It was a hot day.
She was barefoot.
And when it rained, you slid.
In the mud. No, but I think it's important to speak. You're not. Speak to our listener about that. And just before we went on the business break, we were talking about the fact that the business side of the creative arts is something that I don't think we speak about often enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there's a couple of projects you've done, you know, consistently over time, and learned from those projects that have then maybe given rise to the kind of projects that you're working on now. And so maybe speak to us a little bit about that.
I want to say that I don't think that it'll ever be easy to raise capital from the arts. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people say, oh, but in Europe, oh, but in America, it's so much easier. But when I look at, you know, the people who I've worked with in other countries, they have so much patronage, so much support. Mm. Not necessarily only from government, but also just from, you know, regular people who come on board and pay 50,000 shillings, 10,000 shillings, whatever they have. Mm. Because what we don't see is the huge iceberg underneath the water that is called developing the piece. There's the thinking about it, there's the writing it, there's the ideas that don't work at all, that, you know, the stuff that you never
throw out,
that you never even see. And then there's the rehearsal process, and I like to rehearse for long periods. I think that unfortunately Phoenix Players gave us the impression that you could rehearse something for 2 weeks and put it on stage, and because they were a very public space, it in a way made people who rehearse for 6 months and more look as if, you know, maybe that isn't really
the real thing that's happening.
Mm-hmm. But I think that what then happens is what we forget is that when we're paying, when somebody's paying for a ticket at 500 shillings or 1,000 or even 2,000 shillings, they're not paying for, they're paying for the rehearsal process, which includes all of the traffic, traveling, the photocopies of the material, the buying the rights if it's not a Kenyan piece of work, the making posters, putting stuff in the newspaper. Very often the stuff that's in the newspaper, if you have an advert in the newspaper, you're having to pay the same commercial rates as somebody who's selling Kimbo. And somebody who's selling Kimbo is selling Kimbo all over the country, whereas somebody who's selling art is selling it to people who come to a live event and it's 5 nights. So I think we don't appreciate or we don't take into account that art is very difficult to capitalize and to commercialize, and therefore a lot of people are really stunned and shocked that somebody like me has done it for as long as I have. But what I did was, when I first started, I was like everybody else. I thought I needed to get a job, so I went to the UN and I worked for 10 years. And one of the things that I learned there, which you know, I felt when I left that it was a waste of my life and a waste of my time. But what I realized in retrospect is that I learned how to write project proposals. And those project proposals and that capacity that I have for writing funding proposals and for using the language of the NGO or using the language of, you know, sectioning the work so that somebody can read without any knowledge of what this work looks like, what it's going to look like, you know, giving them an idea that then tells them this is worth giving money towards, even though I have no idea what it is.
What the finished product
looks
like.
What the finished product looks like, you know? Because again, using my analogy of Kimbo, you know, you eat.
You can see it.
Yeah. But this creative space and this creative stuff is something that many parents, many even of our peers, even our closest friends, they don't know, why are you still doing this thing? Mm. You know, it's a very hard and lonely space to be in. But it is so, so important. So having learned how to make those project proposals, a lot of the work that I have done over the years has been funded by proposals or by grant-giving organizations that are outside the country and some that are inside the country. I say a big up to Safaricom, because Safaricom were one of my first and sight unseen funders. They helped me put together a festival of dance and storytelling when really I had just left the UN and I pretty much, I think, didn't know what I was doing, just on instinct, and they gave me 100K.
Hey.
And never asked me, you know, what did you do with it? Where's our name on the poster? They didn't ask me any of that stuff. So if we can generate more and more people who are willing to take the leap, because I tell you, this stuff is so important. It's so important for our kids to be able to see themselves reflected. There's so many opportunities to see Americans, so many opportunities to see Europeans, so many opportunities to see people who aren't like us. And the fact that we can create and produce work that speaks in Sheng, that speaks in Swa, that, you know, just has an aesthetic that is our own. It's so life-affirming. It's so healing. Mm. Yeah.
And so having a record of that, I think, is what, you know, we hear our brothers and sisters in the U.S. saying, you know, it's the first time I saw this African-American actress and I saw somebody who looked like me, who then told me it's possible. And I guess because we're all kind of the same, we don't think about it like that. But you're saying it's important to capture that.
Yeah, I recently wrote a play about Mugambi Ndhiga. And in the conversation that we were having when I was creating the material that then became the play that I wrote, he said that one of the things that happened for him as a young actor, and he worked in advertising, for those of you who don't know him, he was in Nairobi Half-Life. And he told me that he watched me in an advert for Cadbury. And realized that he had permission to tell a story that didn't look like Vioja Mahakamani or like
Vitimbi.
Vitimbi, exactly.
Slapstick comedy from...
Yeah, and not that there's anything wrong with that material.
Yeah.
But the fact that he'd never seen anything on television that didn't look like that, he had a wonderful moment of saying, oh my God, I can tell a story that looks like me, a modern
Kenyan dude
in Nairobi.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have to look a particular way. And this is the same thing that I think has happened even for me, where sometimes I will go into a funding space, and because I'm not, you know, single mother needing an income-generating project that involves poultry, I don't have a voice because I am... urban, English speaking, well educated, and of a certain demographic that doesn't have that. But I know that I've spoken to countless people who said that they have never felt like as if they can. Wow. And I think that that's really what
that's powerful.
The kind of work that I try to do is work that attempts to put my footprint on a map that says somebody did it and I can do it too.
Okay.
The best mix of music. 98.4 Capital FM.
This is The Jam on 98.4 Capital FM. Juan Kashui, Martin Karaoke, Moby Kaigwa. And we're having a really necessary conversation, in my opinion, with our Jam Master. And so, you know, the conversation we were having before about being able to see ourselves, being able to know and believe that we have permission to create content that is speaking to us, speaking to our people, but also is a record in time of things that have been created for those who are going to come after us. So I wanted to ask if you would share a little bit about the Art Through My Eyes project that you're currently working on, and the archival bits that you have seen the need to capture.
Well, over the years that I've been working, one of the things that I've really, really felt was a challenge for those of us who do live work. You know, if you don't come to the show, then it's gone and it's not recorded. So when I started out, when I left the UN and I started to create my own work and document my own work, I was very clear that I wanted to film and photograph and write about the work that I was doing. Yeah. So that even if you didn't watch the play, there was you were taken through a process of how the work was created and where the work was shown, who saw it and what they felt about it as a photograph in a moment in time.
Yes.
Also, very many of the not all, but a number of people who you would come across who had come here to create an NGO or to create an artistic space or to create a collective of any sort where, you know, people who are visual artists or performing artists or movie makers were going to gather, gave us the impression that there was nothing there before they came.
We have brought it. We're the ones who have brought it now for the first time.
Yeah. Mm. And as somebody who worked with people who are no longer here in my youth, but who put such a huge footprint, there was, you know, Kenya was the place where refugees ran. And so I worked with John Ruganda from, you know, because he had to run away from Uganda, mm-hmm. And he wrote The Burdens, and he was huge in his own country. I worked with David Rubadiri, who is a poet whose poetry is in our East Africa Writers series. Mm. I worked with people from South Africa who were running away from trouble in South Africa. Mlangabezi Kavundla wrote a beautiful play that was commemorating Winnie Mandela and other freedom fighters. But those plays live in my memory, live in his memory, but there isn't a document that people now can go back and say there was a theatre piece, because many of us don't publish.
Yeah.
None of my own work is published.
So...
Mm-hmm. What I started to think, and again, looking back to my UN days, this may be another one of the reasons why my journey went through the UN. I worked in the UN as a documentalist and as an archivist and as a librarian. So as a theatre performer and a theatre producer and a theatre maker, I've really used those skills to archive and to keep
a record.
A record. And I'm spending, during the COVID years and prior to that, but more so during the COVID years, because we weren't producing and weren't performing, I've been actually creating a document on paper. And I've also created what you've just mentioned, which is Art Through My Eyes, which is a YouTube channel that goes into my archives of material that is audiovisual,
mm-hmm.
and shares it in a way that people can see that we were here
and we are here. Yes,
and Africans didn't necessarily need some foreigner to come and say, "You are good, you can
and
do
continue.
It."
Continue. You have permission.
You have permission. We can give permission to ourselves.
If people wanted to, let's say they have this in their hard drives or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
they've got some audiovisual content, some audio content, some photos. Can they say, "Mumbi, please come and help us put this thing together"? Would you offer that service, or are you only doing it for your own content?
At the moment, I'm only doing it for my own content, but I am working with a group of young people in Buruburu who have a lot more energy and knowledge than I do. And I'm sure that if we were to create some kind of
like a formula,
because I think that, yes, we have the Nairobi archives, but I don't know whether we have an archive of moving images and photographs that are contemporary from maybe, let's say, the 80s onwards,
yes.
that are in that archives. You know, we tend as Kenyans to think that history or tradition or custom or
it
culture,
it must be before
63,
yeah.
it must be in a grass cut,
yeah.
it must talk like this,
black and white,
and it cannot even speak English.
Yeah. And congratulations. That is congratulations, the way they used to say it back then. But I hear you,
but
I agree.
You know
but
what 80s, I mean? We do have a contemporary history.
Yeah.
I have, you know, mined a lot of stuff from traditional Kenya, traditional Africa.
Mm.
But I'm always amazed at how many of my musicians are young people.
Mm.
So there is a culture that exists of traditional musicians who are drummers, who are chivoti players, who play all manner of instruments.
Mm. In this day and age,
who are much younger than I am. But they don't have the access to a space to archive their work, to have a place where somebody not knowing or somebody in a school can go and have a look at that work.
I think it's incredibly important. I mean, it's like where you go to and pick a book in a library or in a, go and look for photos, you know, that you look at in a, or things that are even in a museum.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think there's definitely a place for that.
And I think that the Europeans have that as a culture. Mm-hmm. You can go even to the Smithsonian or to other libraries all over the world and learn about us.
Yeah. And our own story is not being told or captured and documented by us.
Yeah.
Lesson learned. Mombi, thank you. It's 5. I don't know where this time goes. I have like 17 more questions, but it is what it is.
Yeah, man.
And we will not say a big thank you for
coming through
and just sharing like a snippet
of your
50-year journey with us. Aki, we are honored.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And for all of you sending all your love to Ms. Mombi, thank you.
Yeah.
Where she receives it wholeheartedly.
That YouTube page, go subscribe now.
Yeah.
Now,
my eyes.
Yes.
It's actually Mombi Kaigwa.
It's Mombi Kaigwa's YouTube page.
It's my YouTube page.
But, yeah.
but the series. The hashtag.
Hey! Yeah. Come on, somebody.
That's my
hashtag.
The best thing.